From NPR News, this is Foreign Dispatch, a weekly roundup of some of the best coverage of news and events filed by NPR's correspondents from around the globe. I'm Kevin Beasley. This week, the political scandal in China, the mountain standoff between India and Pakistan, and missteps by the King of Spain. China is in the grip of a scandal, a tale of murder, betrayal, and political intrigue, and it could threaten the stability of the entire nation. At its heart is the death last November of a British businessman. The scandal has brought down a high-flying Chinese politician, and his wife has been accused of murder. NPR's Louisa Lim reports from Beijing.
The death of an Englishman overseas has rarely had such fallout. In the British Parliament yesterday, Neil Hayward's death was raised by Foreign Secretary William Hague. The US, too, has been drawn in, since the scandal first broke when Bo Xilai's former police chief sought asylum at a US consulate in early February. He was bearing details of the murder. He was refused asylum and is now in Chinese custody. Then last week, this stunning official announcement on Chinese television. Neil Hayward, it said, had been murdered. Named as a prime suspect was the woman dubbed China's Jackie Kennedy, Gu Kailai, the wife of Bo Xilai. It said she had been close to Hayward, but they'd had a conflict over economic interests. She and a family retainer are being held by the authorities, highly suspected of murder. So who was Neil Hayward? Kerry Brown, a China expert at Chatham House, met him several times over a decade. He sees Hayward as a consultant, effectively selling access to the Bo family.
Yes, I mean, I think he did refer to Bo Xilai, but not particularly in detail. He was working on very specific networks. He kind of kept his business to himself, and I suppose it's become clear as this story has grown and grown how few people really did know much about what he was doing.
Hayward was murdered for threatening to expose plans to transfer money overseas, according to a leak from the Chinese investigation reported by Reuters. Rumours of cyanide and poison drinks have been flying. But none of it, even the most sensational allegations, is a surprise to Chinese journalist Jiang Weiping. He worked for the state-run media, but spent 5 years in prison for reporting on Bo's corruption. He now lives in Canada. He told NPR how Bo and his wife operated back in the 80s. Then Bo Xilai ran Dalian's propaganda office, which oversaw cultural activities. His wife started a Folk Customs Culture Research Institute.
The heads of the Authors Association and the Artists Association, etc., were chosen by his wife. You had to give her gifts before you would be promoted. She got millions from entrepreneurs sponsoring her institute. She used this to throw parties, give favors, and line her own pockets.
As her husband rose through the ranks, Gu, who's a lawyer, set up a legal firm, which Jiang believes fulfilled the same function. Jiang alleges the pair used family members to hide their wealth. Gu's sisters have companies worth $126 million, according to Bloomberg. And Bo's brother is reportedly vice chairman of a state-run company, using a pseudonym, with stock options worth $25 million. NPR has even found a reference to Bo's real estate interests in a leaked US diplomatic cable dating from 2009. Jiang Weiping says Bo used real estate to buy support from the children of high officials, known as princelings.
To make sure he got promotions, Bo Xilai used all his powers as Dalian mayor to bribe other princelings. He gave them land deals, financial projects, and overseas trade opportunities to build connections.
Bo Xilai was the rock star of Chinese politics, a contender for the highest leadership body. Now China's press is stressing this scandal has not touched off any political struggles. Few believe that. In recent days, party members in the military have had to swear loyalty oaths to China's current leadership. Zhang Ming, a political scientist at Renmin University, says this raises suspicions.
There can be only one explanation for the military's oath of loyalty. Hou Xilai tried to mobilize the army, something like a rebellion. He went too far.
The government has firmly denied any coup attempt, arresting six people for spreading such rumors. Bo Xilai is now under investigation for serious disciplinary offenses. Jiang Weiping predicts more details of Bo's fast-living lifestyle will emerge, including his philandering.
He was very powerful. He had girlfriends himself, and he also used women as a commodity to give to other officials.
The real problem is that Bo Xilai himself is a product of China's political system. The son of a communist hero, he used his revolutionary bloodline to accrue untold wealth and privilege. This case opens a window on a princeling oligarchy, as far away from true communism as can be imagined. The very legitimacy of China's Communist Party could be at stake. Optimists hope this scandal will lead to political reform. The alternative, they say, is unthinkable. Louisa Lim, NPR News, Beijing.
Coming up, the mountain standoff between India and Pakistan, and missteps by the King of Spain. For almost 30 years, troops from India and Pakistan have faced off on top of a glacier high in the Himalayas. It's part of their larger and even longer contest over the disputed province of Kashmir. The head of Pakistan's army now says it's time to end the confrontation at the Siachen Glacier. The general called for a peaceful coexistence following an aerial tour of the area where a recent avalanche killed more than 100 Pakistani soldiers. NPR's Julie McCarthy travelled to the site of the disaster.
There is a majesty and a menace to the Siachen Glacier along this northern tip of Kashmir, which is the emotional heart of the conflict between Pakistan and India. Troops from the two nuclear powers square off eyeball to eyeball in unforgiving conditions and cold. There is no hot conflict here, though. Not a shot has been fired in years. The main enemy in this desolate, craggy outpost 13,000 feet above sea level is the cold. Atrocious weather conditions, temperatures plunged to 50 below zero here, have killed more soldiers than any combat. 11 days after the avalanche, rescuers have yet to pull out a single person, dead or alive. The anguishing incident has raised the question whether uninhabitable Siachen Glacier is worth fighting for. Bulldozers operate around the clock to unearth the headquarters of Pakistan's 6th Light Infantry Battalion and the 140 souls smothered beneath a square kilometer of ice and rock. Soldiers in snowy white down jackets swarm the area that has suddenly turned spring-like and more prone to fresh landslides. Members of the media escorted to the area are given a primer on what to do if there is a slide.
If you listen to long blasts of whistles and the shouting avalanche, you have to run that way. Please see, look at the back, the stony area. Please leave your stuff and run to that.
Siachen Commander Brigadier Saqib Mahmood Malik explains that the massive landslide encased the 129 soldiers and 11 civilians under 200 feet of crushed granite and ice.
So therefore, this effort is of a very, very large magnitude. And the boulders are as big as the one you can see at the back.
The boulder he points to sits like a cenotaph above the site where workers now dig. Army Chief General Ashfaq Kiani said yesterday that the army will dig as long as it takes to retrieve the men. And he suggested that Pakistan was interested in demilitarizing the frozen installations that are costing $5 million a month and polluting the environment. Kiani said that had to stop.
For us, Pakistan, it is very important. You see, this is the glacier which feeds our rivers, which feeds the Indus River, which is the main river in Pakistan. So we understand if the physical deployment of troops in these areas and the glaciers get affected, environment get affected, If there's no other reason, I think there's one good enough reason that this area should not be militarized. You can't afford to be firing guns in the glaciated regions. We understand that.
Brutal conditions have claimed the lives of an estimated 3,000 Pakistani soldiers over the years. Many more had limbs amputated due to severe frostbite. Sadr Mahmoud Tariq Aziz lost his toes and heels serving in Siachen in 1999. His patrol mate had to have his legs amputated after they both fell from their post during a landslide. I fell into a crevice. It must have been 15 to 20 feet down. We were lying there the whole night, crying out of pain. It took about 26 hours for them to finally pull us out and get us to a hospital, he says. This veteran of Siachen adds, no soldier should be there. Retired Brigadier Javed Hussein says the Siachen Glacier has no strategic importance and being there is folly. He calls the deployments for the past 28 years pointless and says the governments must negotiate a withdrawal.
And arrive at a settlement which could be based on demilitarization of the zone, pulling out of forces by the two sides, with the United Nations acting as the guarantor.
With a tentative peace process underway, Pakistan-Indian relations are their warmest in years. For many, the disaster in Siachen should accelerate that warming. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, Islamabad.
This is Foreign Dispatch. I'm Kevin Beasley. If you're the national leader of a country with huge economic troubles, it might be a bad time to go on an extravagant elephant hunt. But that's exactly what the King of Spain did, spending nearly $60,000, more than twice the annual salary of the average Spaniard, at a time when almost a quarter of all workers have no job at all. The Spanish public only found out about the trip because the king broke his hip and had to be airlifted home. Lauren Freyer sent this report from Madrid.
For a man used to pomp and paparazzi, King Juan Carlos looked shaken emerging from a hospital Wednesday after hip surgery. I'm very sorry, he said, blinking into the cameras, sheepish and leaning on his crutches. I made a mistake and it won't happen again. The Royal Palace confirmed this is the first time any Spanish king has ever said he's sorry, at least publicly, for anything.
I think it's not enough.
Rafa Lucia is a social worker smoking outside a Madrid library in the rain. He's been jobless for months. The government cut his local school's budget by 30%. But the Royal Palace's budget?
They cut just the 2%. And now this is like the government doesn't cut to them. And then he's spending the money in Africa killing elephants.
Spaniards can't decide which would be worse, whether the king might have spent public money on his jaunt to Botswana last week, or whether it was paid by an Arab businessman courting favor, as some reports say. Either way, there are calls for the king's abdication. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad if the king hadn't recently given a speech calling on Spanish leaders to set an example of modesty amid recession. He also said he loses sleep worrying about how many Spanish youth are unemployed, 50% of them. Sharon Nunez is an animal rights activist who organized a protest outside the king's hospital this week. Volunteers lined the street with photos of maimed elephants and water buffalo.
That's the funny, the ironic thing about it is we have someone who's going out killing elephants, killing animals, and he's representing an international environmental organization.
It's inconvenient, but true. The king is honorary president of the World Wildlife Fund in Spain, which proved particularly awkward when a snapshot of Juan Carlos began circulating online this week. It shows him posing in front of an elephant he shot dead in Botswana in 2006. WWF's conservation director for Spain, Enrique Segovia, says he's requested an audience with the king to discuss whether he'll keep that post. We've had many, many complaints from members, he says. The image of the king hunting elephants, it's incongruent with an organization like ours that defends elephants. Spain's monarchy is mostly symbolic but well-respected. Juan Carlos was hand-picked by General Francisco Franco to lead Spain after the dictator's 1975 death, and he's credited with easing the transition to democracy here. But college student Roy Alexander Buza says times have changed.
It's true that all people here in Spain appreciate the work that the king did in the transition, but I think that we are now in another time. The transition is the past, and the king have to do efforts like the rest of the citizens.
It's been a tough year for Spain's royals. The king's son-in-law is the subject of a corruption probe, and last week police began investigating an incident involving the king's underage grandson. The 13-year-old recently shot himself in the foot, literally. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Freyer in Madrid.
For more international coverage, you can listen to your local NPR station. You'll find a list at our website, npr.org. And while you're there, you can find more international stories by clicking on News and World. For NPR News, I'm Kevin Beasley.